Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Researchers believe Burmese pythons were first introduced to the Everglades National Park sometime around 1985, and they've been established and spreading ever since. And while most research on the invasive snake has focused on ecological impacts to native vertebrates, primarily mammals, little is known about how pythons interact with other types of creatures like insects. In our case today, mosquitoes. Now new research coming out of the University of Florida is exploring which mosquitoes bite pythons and whether researchers can use that information to determine where pythons are living in the wild. Joining me now is Dr. Lawrence Reeves. He's a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Florida, IFAS, Florida Medical Entomology Law in Vero Beach. Dr. Reeves, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. I can't believe that a mosquito would have the guts to bite a python.
Yeah, mosquitoes are very interesting in that they feed on just about anything you can, or any vertebrate you can think of. Even some fish are fed upon by mosquitoes.
Nobody is immune to being annoyed by a mosquito.
No, that's correct.
Do they get mosquito bites? I mean, does it itch?
So, at least, it's kind of hard to get into the mindset of a non-human animal, but in some cases, more than likely, there are frogs that are bitten by mosquitoes, and in watching these frogs, you can see them obviously kind of irritated that they're being bitten. And so these little frogs have mosquitoes perched on their head feeding, and they'll use their hands to kind of wipe the mosquitoes away.
Oh, so you can see evidence of the frog not enjoying it, but getting into the mind of a Burmese python might be prove a little more difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me about this research that you're doing.
So I'm interested in biodiversity as a whole, kind of, and I study biodiversity through mosquitoes. Mosquitoes, as we talked about, they interact with just about any vertebrate. So one of the things that's been on my radar is the potential of using mosquitoes to detect Burmese pythons or other vertebrate diversity. So kind of the idea behind it is that you go out, you collect a bunch of mosquitoes, and then sort of Jurassic Park style, you extract DNA from these mosquito blood meals, and you can look at the DNA and look at specific segments of that DNA and identify what animal they fed on. So if you've ever watched a mosquito feeding from you and just let it fly off, you can see that they're very kind of clumsy and kind of burdened by the blood meal that they have or that they've taken, so they can't fly too far. So if you find the DNA of a specific animal inside of a mosquito, that implies that that animal is present in the area where you found the mosquito.
Oh, because he's so full, he doesn't have the energy really to fly very effectively to get away from where he just ate.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so I get what you're saying. So then by finding mosquitoes, you can tell that if they have DNA of a python in the blood that's in their belly, then they are near where a python is.
Yes. So there's kind of this emerging concept of environmental DNA. So DNA fragments are everywhere, or rather loose DNA fragments are everywhere in the environment. So there's DNA in the soil and in water, and in this case, in the stomachs of mosquitoes. And so we can go out and we can collect that DNA, and now molecular technologies are powerful enough that we can sequence the DNA and identify what organism they came from.
Are you finding a lot of mosquitoes feeding on pythons?
So I'm just now analyzing, or rather, I'm just now sequencing DNA from the Everglades, from mosquitoes collected in the Everglades. So at this point, it's a bit too early to say, but in the study that we recently published, we collected mosquitoes from a facility that housed them outdoors. So these pythons are kept in these wire mesh cages that mosquitoes can pass freely through. So by collecting mosquitoes outside the pens, we found that at least three species were using them as hosts.
So there are three different kinds of mosquitoes, species of mosquitoes that you
say?
Yeah,
we've got excuse me?
So you're saying there are three different species of mosquitoes that are feeding on pythons?
That we've found so far.
That you found so far.
Yeah, so here in Florida, we have about 80 mosquito species. And each mosquito species, in terms of the hosts that it uses, each mosquito species has its own kind of personality. You've got some mosquito species that are generalists, and they'll feed on just about any vertebrate host that they encounter. But the majority of mosquitoes, they're feeding on only certain animals. So you have some that only feed on birds, some that feed from both both birds and mammals, warm-blooded animals, and then you have others that prefer certain types of cold-blooded animals, like frogs, for example, or reptiles.
Mm-hmm. You know, we hear a lot about the lack of vertebrate animals in the Everglades because of the predation of the Burmese python. We have fewer and fewer animals that are available for the mosquitoes to have meals on. Have there been any, or have you been able to trace any populations of mosquitoes or species of mosquitoes that cease to exist because they don't have anything to eat?
No. So we haven't found anything like that. But I collaborated with another group from the Florida Medical Entomology Lab on a project in the Everglades, and we found that rather than eliminating a mosquito species, it forces some mosquito species to target other animals that they, or rather to kind of shift their use of hosts. So one in particular, an interesting mosquito called Culex cdci. It's named after the CDC in Atlanta. So Culex cdci is the vector of a virus called Everglades virus, which is a strain of the Venezuelan equine encephalitis virus. Mm-hmm. It's not a major health risk to humans, but this virus is kind of propagated by this mosquito feeding from rodents, which are the reservoir hosts for this virus. And normally this mosquito is feeding on rodents, raccoons, birds, rabbits, a wide variety of mammals. But with the pythons feeding on these other mammal species, it's kind of forcing these mosquitoes to go closer, forcing these mosquitoes to feed more closely from these rodents, which may be affecting the transmission of this virus by increasing it.
We did a show about that a while back, and that was pretty alarming. And then the reason that we were given before that it wasn't such a big problem for human populations is because the mosquitoes that are out there don't tend to go towards human populations, but the risk is there. And the next question I have is there anything that a python might be carrying that could be transferred from a python to a human? Any kind of diseases that are lurking there that people might feel concerned about?
At this point, it's too early to tell. I would not be so concerned with pythons directly transmitting a virus, or with mosquitoes directly transmitting a virus from a python or another pathogen from a python to a human. But what could happen, or one possible scenario is that mosquitoes that feed on, or rather pythons that are fed upon by mosquitoes, help the transmission of some of these viruses. So when mosquito populations die back in the wintertime or become suppressed, the transmission of these viruses kind of goes down with the mosquitoes. But if a virus is in something like a snake, and there's some evidence that says that this happens, the snake can serve as kind of an overwintering host for a virus. So if you imagine places up north, the mosquitoes are entirely out of the picture for about half the year. The virus can persist in the environment inside of reptiles that kind of process the virus relatively slowly. So when they come out of hibernation the following spring, mosquitoes that feed on them then can then reinfect other organisms.
Mm-hmm.
So More than a direct python to human implication, I would worry more that pythons sort of promote the transmission of these viruses by kind of serving as hosts that could reinfect mosquitoes following colder weather.
Yeah, like putting it on the shelf. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Luther.
Putting it in the fridge.
Yeah, putting it in the cold-blooded fridge.
Yep.
What is the name of the when a mosquito is sucking blood out of an animal? What is the name of that, like little, I guess, straw?
Oh yeah. So typically it's called a proboscis, but that kind of refers to the whole that whole mouth part. Mm-hmm. So if you look at a mosquito, you see that that kind of needle-looking syringe proboscis.
Yeah.
But that's not actually the part that is going down into your skin and hunting around for a blood vessel. That is kind of the sheath that protects it. So they have these stylets that are inside of that proboscis, and that's what's feeding into your skin to lacerate a blood vessel and feed and extract blood.
So these three mosquitoes that are able to have blood meals from pythons, do they have like the proboscis of steel? I mean, how do they get through that skin?
Oh yeah, so they aren't going through the scales. Mosquitoes are. They aren't dummies. They can, when they land on a host, they can find soft spots from which to feed. So in the case of the pythons, they're most likely just feeding in between scales, potentially from the eyes or even the nose. I've watched mosquitoes in the Everglades feeding from alligators and crocodiles, and you can see kind of where they're clustered. They cluster particularly around the nose and the eyes, but they can also get between the scales of reptiles as large as crocodiles.
Hmm. So I'm wondering if there's any possibility of, and you know, these are those kind of things that can backfire, but creating like a Burmese python style malaria that could knock out the invasive snake species.
Yeah. So perhaps 10 or maybe 20 years from now, that will be a feasible possibility. At this point, I think it's too much playing with fire.
Yeah.
But down the road, it could become it could easily become a possibility with the direction that molecular technologies are moving, in particular with things like CRISPR.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But I mean, you know, kind of weaponizing the mosquito and making it something that we don't completely wholesale dislike.
Yeah, yeah. And so very few mosquito species of the roughly 3,600 that exist around the world. Very few of them feed from humans, and even fewer are important in transmitting disease. The mosquitoes that we kind of are irritated by are just kind of the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole plethora of mosquito species that kind of exist unless you're looking for them, exist without your knowledge. And some of them are actually really charismatic. There's some that that are kind of shiny purple and blue, others that have flags on their legs. They're a really interesting group of insects.
I feel like I've talked to you before about these insects because I think you're the maybe the only person who said that there are charismatic mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah. It may not have been me, but I know of a couple other people it could have been who also kind of appreciate the beauty of mosquitoes.
Probably the researcher that was talking to me about the rodents that are carrying the Everglades virus.
Yeah. So I just graduated with my PhD here at up in Gainesville at the University of Florida, but I'm moving down to Vero Beach to work with him in the next couple weeks. So.
I wonder where that research is going to go. Do you have any idea how that has continued to progress?
Yeah, so we're continuing to work down there in the Everglades. We're kind of focusing in on this QLEX-CDCI Burmese python interaction, but I have ambitions to kind of expand out the biodiversity perspective in effect, to use these methods that I've been using here in Florida, for example, a tropical rainforest, to as much as possible survey the vertebrate diversity that lives in a rainforest.
So, are there any implications of finding python blood in mosquitoes that non-scientists might not think of?
Well, so other than the epidemiological side and the invasive species side. Burmese pythons, their range is expanding, so it'll become increasingly important to kind of detect their spread. And so Burmese pythons also, they're using traditional methods like kind of these transect walks or just visual detection. It can be very difficult, and the probability of detection for an individual snake is very low. So moving forward, it's going to be important to monitor the spread of the pythons and using mosquitoes and also environmental DNA sampling through water is likely to become increasingly important. But also, it kind of highlights the implications of invasive species. So Burmese pythons, they were released in the Flamingo area of the Everglades, and from these released pets, they have established this large population that is having huge implications on the mammals that live in the Everglades and indirect implications through these mosquitoes. So I think that while this isn't quite an implication of the work, it does highlight what can happen when animals are released into ecosystems in which they are not native.
Exactly. And it's interesting that you could probably be standing about 6 inches away from a Burmese python and barely know it because of the way that they blend in with the ground cover. And you could be collecting your mosquitoes to sample the blood and find that there's one right there, but you would never – they're almost impossible to see.
Yeah, I always wonder how close I get to these snakes when I'm out there. I see them on occasion on the roads, but I've never found one off the road.
Yeah, I would not probably want to know that necessarily.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's about all the time that we have for today's show, but I want to thank you, Dr. Lawrence Reeves. He's the postdoctoral researcher at the University of Florida, IFAS, Florida Medical Entomology Law in Vero Beach. Dr. Reeves, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right, you too. And also thanks to our earlier guests, Patrice Cunningham with the United Way and Kim Swanson with the Lee County Sheriff's Office during our segment about tax tips, and Dr. Mary Beth Saunders from Lee Health for our segment on flu season. Our show today was produced by Mike Inire, Rachel Iacovone, and yours truly. Our director today is Mike Inire, and our social media coordinator is Rachel Iacovone. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.